except that in 1948, he joined the Black Muslim movement and adopted the last name X, which he maintains today. Although still a Muslim, he has broken with Black Muslim movement recently, where he served as the chief minister. And he is now chairman of an organization of African unity, the description of which I will leave to him. He now prefers to be known as Brother Malcolm when he is speaking in a religious capacity, but Malcolm X when he's speaking in a political capacity. The New York Times reported not too long ago that Malcolm X was the second most sought-after speaker on colleges and university campuses. The first was Barry Goldwater. I introduce this evening's speaker, Mr. Malcolm X.
Mr. Moderator, fellow panelists, ladies and gentlemen, I first want to thank the Harvard Law School Forum for the invitation to speak here this evening, and especially on a very timely topic, the African Revolution and its impact upon the American Negro. We probably won't use the word American Negro. We will substitute it with the word Afro-American. And when I say Afro-American, I mean it in the same context that you usually use the word Negro in. But our people today increasingly are shying away from that word, the kind that when you're identified as one, it tends to make you catch a whole lot of hell that people who aren't identified as that don't catch. Along with the present debate that's going on in the Congo right now, if you've been following it, you probably are aware that there's a new tone and a new tempo, almost a new temper being reflected among African statesmen toward the United States. And I think we should be interested and concerned with what impact this will have upon the Afro-American, and how will it affect America's internal race relations. It will affect, we know that it will affect America's race relations with the world at the international level. It's already having that effect. But what we're primarily concerned with here in this country is what effect will it have upon the internal race relations that they say have been developing in this country between the Afro-American and the white American. Tonight, during the few moments that we have, I myself would rather just engage in a very informal chat type talk with you. And the reason that I would rather be informal, I've learned people are more relaxed and open-minded under those circumstances. And my experience has been that many white Americans usually reflect a great deal of intelligence until you get them in a discussion on things racial. As soon as you get them on the race issue, all of their intelligence seems to go right down the drain. They become more involved emotionally, and they cease to be able to be objective. And also, they cease to appear to be intelligent. So, since we know that it's a very touchy situation, and I can understand why it would be, because there's a lot of guilt involved. We would hope to create some kind of atmosphere to keep as much open-mindedness as possible. To me, it's actually encouraging to see as many out here as are here, showing a personal interest in the problem. Myself, I believe the best advice that can be given to anybody today, especially students, is to try and always go places and see things for yourself and hear people for yourself so that you can think for yourself and judge for yourself. If you sit around and let others tell you how to think based upon what they've seen and what they've heard, you find that you will always be misjudging many situations and many people. And the time that we're living in nowadays, it's very important to make a sound judgment. And the best judgment you can make is from for yourself, because that's what you make and what you've seen and what you've heard with your own eyes and with your own ears. When you let yourself be influenced by images that have been created by others, you find that oftentimes the one who creates those images can use that image to mislead you, confuse you, and misuse you by misleading you. A good example, about a month ago, I was on a plane between Algiers and Geneva, and there were a couple of Americans, whites, one male and one female, sitting to my right. We were all in the same row. And we had a nice conversation going for about 35 or 40 minutes. And finally, this lady, she looked at my briefcase and she said, "I would like to ask you a personal question." Well, I knew it was coming. She said, "What kind of last name could you have that begins with X?" So I told her, "Well, that's it, X." And she said, "Well, what's your first name?" So I said, "Malcolm." So about 2 minutes went by. And she came to me and said, "You're not Malcolm yet." You see, we had a nice conversation going. Just three human beings. And as soon as, but she couldn't believe that I was the one that she had heard about, because she was looking for the image that had been created by the press. And she said so. She said, I just wouldn't have believed that you were that man. So I had another similar experience last week in Oxford, at the Oxford Union. We had a debate, and before the debate, several students had dinner together. And there was one girl student that looked kind of cross-eyed, goggle-eyed, and otherwise. And finally, she just told me that she wanted to ask me a question. She said that, I found out she was a conservative too, by the way, whatever that is. And she said that, "I just can't get over you not being like I had expected." So I told her that it's another case of the press again, which is very skillful at creating images. And then I had a similar case last night, experience last night in New York at the United Nations. A friend of mine from Africa came in with a white woman who was involved in some kind of philanthropic foundation over there, you know, there's a lot of them. And she and I was in a conversation for several minutes, and she was standing there. I conversed with her. She was in and out of it. And finally, I heard her whisper to someone off to the side. She didn't think I was listening. She said, she actually said this. "He doesn't look so wild, you know." Now, this was a full-grown, so-called mature woman. But it shows the extent to which the press can create images and have people looking for one thing and actually miss the boat because they're looking for the wrong thing. They were looking for horns. And by horns, I mean they were looking for a man whom they expect to hear say, "We should kill all the white people." As if you could kill all the white people. Someone who's a rabble-rouser, irrational, antisocial, extremist. In fact, if I had believed what they said about the people in Britain, I never would have gone to Oxford. I would have let it slide. And when I got there, I didn't go by what I had read about them. When I got there, I found out that they were quite human, likable, some of them. They weren't what I had expected. And I only take time to mention that tonight because, in my opinion, one of the sciences that is being used today and misused today is this science of image making. The power structure uses it. They use it at the local level, they use it at the national level, and they use it at the international level. And oftentimes when you and I think that we've come to a conclusion on our own, the conclusion we've come to is something that someone else has invented for us by the images that they created. So I can speak briefly concerning my own stand. I'm a Muslim. Now, if something is wrong with that, we can get with it. I'm a Muslim, which only means that I believe in the religion of Islam. I believe in Allah, same God probably that many of you would believe in if you knew more about him. I believe in all of the prophets, from Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, and I think most of you yourselves, if you're Jewish, you believe in Moses, you might not take Jesus. And if you're Christian, you believe in Moses and Jesus. Well, I'm a Muslim. I believe in Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. I believe in all of them. So I think that I'm way up on you in religion. And in the religion that I believe in, we practice prayer, charity, fasting, the things that should be practiced in all religions. And so far as the Muslim religion is concerned, another part of it that one must practice if one can is the pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca, which I was fortunate to make in April, the Hajj in April, and I went back again in September. So insofar as being a Muslim is concerned, as far as I know, I'm a Muslim. I've done what one is supposed to do to be a Muslim, whether he's in Pakistan, Indonesia, Arabia, or some other part of the Muslim world. But usually when the press, when you leave leave it up to the press. They leave out that part because they don't want the public to in any way identify anyone whose views they can't control as being something connected with religion. Despite being a Muslim, I can't overlook the fact that I'm an Afro-American in a country that has a racist society and that practices racism against black people in this country. So there is no religion under the sun that would make me forget the suffering that our people undergo in this country for no reason other than that our skins happen to be black. So whether I'm a Muslim, or Christian, or Buddhist, or Hindu, an atheist, or an agnostic, I would still be on the front line with our people fighting against the racism and segregation in this country at all levels, in North, in the South, and in the East, and in the West. I believe in the brotherhood of all men, but I don't believe in wasting brotherhood on anybody who doesn't want to practice brotherhood with me. I don't think that brotherhood should be practiced with a man just because his skin is white. I think that brotherhood should be practiced with a man based upon the deeds and the attitude of that man. So as where brotherhood goes, I'm for brotherhood with everybody who wants to practice brotherhood. But I couldn't practice brotherhood with Eastern and some of those crackers in the South who are responsible for the condition of our people, as well as many of these in the North, who are also responsible for the condition of our people. So where brotherhood goes, I'm for brotherhood. But in my opinion, brotherhood is a two-way street. Those who want to practice it, I want to practice it with them. But those who think I should practice it, and they should watch me practice it, I don't go along with that. As a Muslim, I'm against every form of racism, not only as a Muslim, as a human being. I'm against every form of racism and segregation, and will unite with anybody who is genuinely involved in a struggle against racism and discrimination. But I don't go for these mediocre efforts, these pronouncements, and then mediocre efforts against racism and discrimination. We don't want to get involved in that. I think that racism is a crime, that it's criminal, and that our people in this country are the chief victims of that crime. And as far as I'm concerned, when a racist comes to practice racism against me, I intend to fight him, not nonviolently. I think that I am justified, and any black man is justified, in fighting in any means necessary, by any means necessary, against anyone who comes to inflict him with any kind of brutal harm whatsoever. And I think that that kind of thinking is increasing among our people in this country, whether people want to hear us or not. You can give out all the peace prizes on earth. That's not going to make the people who aren't at peace be at peace. In fact, I might even say, offhandedly, that if I was in a battle following a general, and they started giving him peace prizes before the battle was won and before the wall was open, he'd have a lot of trouble out of me. I couldn't accept a prize for peace as a leader of people while my people have no peace. Peace is a two-way street. It's not something that's supposed to be considered by just one people or just one person or just one side. The press in this country is used and has been used very skillfully to create images. And in creating these images, it actually misleads people, confuses people, to the point where we here in America live in a racist society. We're the victims of racism, we're the victims of segregation, we're the victims of these injustices. But when we cry out against these injustices in an uncompromising language, we are the ones who are called racist, and we are the ones who are called extremists, and we are the ones who are called... But for no reason other than the fact that we take an uncompromising stand against racism, they call us racist. Or because we take an uncompromising stand against segregationists, they call us segregationists. This is the press that does this, so that when we start crying out against the crime, instead of people looking at us as victims of the crime, who are reacting to the crime, they see us in the image that the press has created, as racists who have no justification whatsoever for reflecting the type of attitude that we do. And this press is used very skillfully at the local level by the police, it's used at the national level by the FBI, is used at the international level by the CIA for doing nothing other than creating images that will justify at the local level whatever the police want to do to their victims, or at the national level whatever the FBI wants to do to its victims, or at the international level whatever the CIA wants to do to its victims. They create the victim in the image of an extremist. And once the victim is projected in the image of an extremist, then everything the victim does, even to defend itself from other people's extremism, is an act of extremism. They create the victim in the image of someone who's violent, and then when the victim is doing something, is struggling vigorously to protect itself from the violence of others, the victim is made to appear in the image of a criminal itself, and the criminal is projected in the image of someone who's the victim. The press does this, and the people in this country especially are victimized by it more so than any place on this earth. They create images for the power structure. And in a nutshell, they make the criminal look like the victim, and the victim look like the criminal. The recent situation in the Congo is one of the best examples of it. The headlines that were used and the manner in which they were used are a good example of how the press is used by the power structure to mislead the public, just by creating images in the wrong way. In the Congo, they had planes bombing Congolese villages. Now, the Congolese have no air force. They have no defense against an air force. Yet American people have read in the paper where American trained anti-Castro Cuban pilots are bombing the rebel stronghold, meaning that these pilots are dropping bombs on African villages, in which are women, children, and babies. But because they very shrewdly put that tag, American trained, this gives it legality. Anti-Castro Cuban, that gives it legality. Because they're against Castro, whatever they do is all right. Because they're American trained, whatever they do is all right. Despite the fact that what they're doing is dropping bombs on villages that know nothing about a defense against bombing, and blowing black women and black children and black babies, as well as black men, to death. But they get away with it because they've been given a holier-than-thou image with the American labor, or the anti-Castro labor. This is the press that does this. And it's criminal. But the criminal here is made to look like the victim. And you let them get away with it because the victim has been made to look like the criminal, with shrewd press maneuvering. But one cannot deny that the planes are American, and the bombs are American. And they're being escorted by American paratroopers and flown by Cubans who have been trained by Americans to drop bombs, which is mass murder. Murder of women, children, and babies. But it's okay, because the victim has been given the image of the criminal. And the criminal who's responsible has been given the image of the victim. And they disguise mass murder as a humanitarian project. And they fool nobody but the people here in America. They don't fool the world. The world is already able now to see beyond that. Particular the stepfather, they have a man over there called Shondi. A murderer, actually. The world knows that he's the murderer of the rightful prime minister of the Congo. No matter how, what kind of language you put it in, he's a murderer, pure and simple. The real prime minister of the Congo was murdered. His name was Patrice Lumumba. He was murdered by this man. So the American government, your and my government, takes this murderer and hires him. They prop him up. What's that? Hire him. They hire him to run the Congo. He's a killer. He becomes their hired killer. They put him in office and prop him up with American dollars. And to show what a hired killer he is, his first act is to go to South Africa and hire more killers and pay them with American dollars. And it's glorified because he's given the image by the press as being the only one that can bring stability to the Congo. He's a murderer. Whether he can bring stability or not, he's still a murderer. But he's forced upon the American public with the American press. And the American people are dumb enough to buy it. I don't mean you, because I know you all here at Harvard are more intelligent than that. That's And all of this is condoned only because, again, the press projects this operation as a humanitarian project. When they wanted to bring in the troops a couple of weeks ago, the press again was used. They built up hysteria in the mind of the public in order to get the sympathy of the public to ensure that they would support the criminal action that they were about to become involved in. The headlines spoke about white hostages. They didn't say hostages. They said white hostages. They didn't say missionaries. They said white missionaries. They didn't say nuns and priests. They said white nuns and priests. Why? They had to get the sympathy of the white public in America. They had to trick up your mind, get your sympathy and your support for the criminal action that they were getting ready to become involved in that Congo. And they tricked you. As I say, not you, but the general American public came out with no outcry. But when you read the press, I think you'd have to agree. It would be easy for one to get the impression that Americans consider white lives to be more valuable than black lives. Americans consider 40 white lives more valuable than 4,000 black lives. This is the impression one would get from the press. Because it wasn't, if it was a humanitarian project, it would have been sufficient to say that human beings were being held hostage, that human life is at stake. But there were thousands of Congolese already losing their lives. The mercenaries were shooting them down like cattle. And these mercenaries were paid with American dollars, or by American dollars. So I say that the American press has been used to mislead the people, the American people. They've made the murderers look like thieves. They've made the victims look like criminals. They've made criminals look like the victims. In fact, they've made the devil look like an angel, and the angels look like devils. And I don't think anybody would deny that when you send chickens out of your barnyard in the morning, at nightfall, those chickens are going to come back home to roost in your barnyard. Chickens that you send out always come back. That's a law of nature. I was an old farm boy myself. I got in trouble seeing this one. But it didn't stop me from being a farm boy. When you send your chickens away, your chickens always come back home. Other people's chickens don't come to roost on your doorstep. And yours don't go to roost on theirs. So the chickens that this country is responsible today for sending out, whether the country likes it or not, if you're in any way mature and you look at it like it is, someday, and someday soon, they've got to come back home to roost. America, because of her recent policy in the Congo, is being tracked. A friend of mine from Africa, who is in a good position to know, said that he believes that the United States government is being advised by her worst enemy in the Congo. Because never has someone come up with such insane action as this government has been involved in the Congo. Especially identifying itself with a man like Shumbi, who is the worst African on earth. You can't find an African on earth that's more hated than Shumbi. And it's a justified hate that they have toward him. He wins no victory. His soldiers have never won a victory. That is, Congolese troops have never won a victory for Shumbi. Every victory that Shumbi has received has been victories that have been won for him by white mercenaries who are hired to kill for him. But the Africans in the Congo who win don't win for the Leopoldville government. They win for the Stanleyville government. Every victory that has been brought about by sheer Congolese soldiering has been brought about for the Stanleyville government because they're fighting for themselves. But the victories for Shumbi are only by outsiders, which only means that the only way you can keep him is keep propping him up. And you got to send more white soldiers and more white soldiers and more white soldiers. And the Congo is too big for that many white people to get bogged down in. And it's hot. And it's an uncomfortable place for you. And if the government doesn't realize this soon, I think you'll find that the American troops will be bogged down in a worse situation in the Congo than they are presently bogged down in South Vietnam over there in Asia. And as an American, at least that's what they told me I was, I'm concerned. I wouldn't like to see our good country get bogged down in the Congo. Jumbi himself will never be acceptable to the Congolese people. He'll never be acceptable to the African people. And any African government that supports Jumbi will be overturned by the people of that country. There is no African leader in any country that would have the audacity to stand up and support a man like Jumbi and not be writing his own doom on the wall. Because the African people are the ones who won't accept a man like Jumbi, and the only way you can get an African government to endorse Jumbi is to give that African government some American dollars. Because Jumbi is a curse. He's an insult to anybody who means right, whether you're black or white. And when Jumbi went to Cairo, it caused trouble. When he went to Rome last week, it caused trouble. He went to Germany, it caused trouble. Wherever Jumbi goes, it's trouble he rides. And if Jumbi comes to America, you'll see the worst type of rioting and bloodshed and violence that this country has ever seen. Nobody wants that kind of man in their country. And you can't find any Afro-American who would go along with any kind of governmental policy as is being practiced in the Congo right now. It is an insult for black people in this country to vote for a man like Johnson, 97%. And his first act is to send mercenaries and paratroopers into the Belgian Congo, where they said they kidnapped us from 400 years ago.